I'm Wyatt's wife.
Tracy.
Wacy.
Wacy.
I was being literal.
What was your name? Shanalaka Ding Dong.
Shekinah Naki Niki.
Shekinah Lala.
I don't remember what that was from. I was giving myself a new name.
Yeah, a new name in tongues.
That's right.
Wasalalia. Speaking of tongues, we just saw two movies that had people speaking in tongues in them.
Should have bought a Hyundai.
There was another one. I don't remember the phrase.
I don't know them. You know them.
They were like fake ways to speak in tongues. Tongues is a very interesting thing, Tracy, just like sharks.
Yes, just like sharks.
Sharks are scary. You want to talk about sharks or the movies first?
I thought we were going to talk about the movies first. Right, you're trying to segue way too soon. We can't even get to our first topic if you skip it.
Oh, the first topic. What's our first topic?
We're going to talk about evangelical documentaries that have been released in the last, 10 years, 5 to 10 years.
Specifically two of them.
Jesus Camp, which was recently released to DVD. You can get it in your local Blockbuster if it still exists, or if it's only gone online. Or Hell House, which is an older documentary, but still good.
Yeah.
So what did you think about these portrayals of evangelical America?
Well, I'll talk about Jesus Camp, and then talk about Hell House.
Let's just talk about Jesus Camp first, together.
Well, I felt like Jesus Camp was a documentary that did a fairly good job of filming a Christian camp that was evangelical and Pentecostal.
Pentecostal, mm-hmm.
Specifically Pentecostal, and I think that Pentecostal is very scary to people who are not in a Pentecostal church, especially because of the whole idea of the Holy Spirit baptism, which is usually like when people have a religious ecstasy and they fall on the ground and people are really afraid of, like, the idea of, like, speaking in tongues, which is, like, glossolalia is a Greek word for it. So these filmmakers, I think there are two women.
Yes.
Went into this camp and followed around the director of the camp, and they do all these shots of the kids, but, you know, all the shots that they do, they put eerie music on, and they put, like, you know, empty scenes of, like, farm equipment and stuff like you would normally see in, like, a horror movie.
Yeah.
Between film. That's and it's true. Like, they're trying to play with your emotions with music and things. So it's kind of, like, shot like a horror film. But the actual documentary part, I think, was fairly objective.
The content was objective.
Like, if
the way the content was portrayed, it was not objective.
You could, as we heard a review that basically said that, you know, the film was fairly objective, but you could tell that the filmmakers had an agenda as they filmed it. So I feel like I didn't walk away with feeling positive, because the points where you should feel really good and motivated was the time they played the really eerie music that, you know, typically, you know, if you listen to it, it's going to make you feel kind of like
something wrong is going on.
Or twisted is there because they didn't like it.
But from our perspective as evangelical Christians ourselves, we didn't find that the content or what was being taught or led to be anything scary as someone who is not a Christian might find it to be.
Well, I actually, listening to some of the testimonies of the mothers and the kids, were actually inspiring, because the women are very, like, you know, godly people, and, you know, they were really like, you know, I can't put my problems on other people, and I need to take care of my family and do the things. I mean, I don't have a really good anecdote and quote to give you.
Oh, I remember the one lady was saying how she was homeschooling her kids, but she said she viewed raising kids as they're just being on loan from God, I think, and that she's just there to do.
They didn't think it was good just to dump your kids on the system, and you have to have personal responsibility of your kids. And you could tell the people who did the camp really cared about the kids.
I don't feel that there was any aspect of brainwashing, which is what I've heard from a lot of
people. Yeah, people really have negative views of it.
People in the media who see it, and I don't think that I saw that at all.
Yeah.
I mean, teaching kids doctrine is part of what everyone does, and you can call it brainwashing for anything.
Yeah, I really walked away feeling like, you know, it did, you know, film a, a Christian camp in the Pentecostal realm fairly well.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, when I walk away with it, cringing fairly, because I went to a Christian camp as a kid many years, and the people I met there were really authentic and selfless, and all the people who volunteered there were just, they really gave of themselves, and that made the most influence in me, that really I was not supposed to live to myself, but actually, like, go out and help other people and not think about what I care about, mm-hmm. and realize that I don't have all the answers. I have to submit myself to something better. It just really changed my life and gave me a perspective. And, you know, everyone that I've known that had actually gone to those camps really just had a great change in character and the quality of their life, and their godliness is just revolutionary. Everyone walks out of there really believing in it. And then when you actually experience it, it's scary from the outside, but when you see it yourself, and then it's a totally different perspective. And I just felt like those people were looking at it kind of like abhorred by it. Like they're just
showing. They really focused in on the how the Pentecostals that were anti-abortion, and like they're kind of made it seem like they were using their kids as pawns to go against these things that they considered political. So they're trying to have like, oh, watch out for the evangelicals are coming to take over your country. All you liberals, they're going to ruin it with anti. They're not going to let you have abortions anymore, and they're.
I mean, the only negative dialogue was to say this radio announcer between scenes, who would just bash. They didn't say what they believed, but they were using his opinions, you know, strategically.
And he wasn't. He didn't come off as a Christian at all to me.
He was just trying.
He was trying to tear down what this whole Pentecostal movement was doing.
He wasn't productive at all. He was just trying to belittle something, kick him, you know. And so, like, I wouldn't say that I wouldn't really recommend to other people watch it just because I don't want to support the people who made the film.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Like, if you were to cut the soundtrack out and you cut out the commentary, it's kind of interesting to kind of see what's going on in a camp.
Yeah, I think the Pentecostal, if you're not familiar with it,
it's not something I would show to my unsaved friends just because I think they would just judge it without understanding it.
Right.
You know? Where I felt like Hell House was a lot more objective, and if you were not, you know, aware of what that kind of stuff was or whatever, that I think they had a much more positive view. And I can't say that the film director was any different than the people who did Jesus Camp.
Yeah, because we listened to that commentary, but he was much more objective in how he shot it.
I'm sure that he probably felt the same way about Jesus Camp as the directors of Jesus Camp did, but he was more tasteful
in how he produced it.
He pretty much left it up to the viewer to decide whether if it was good or bad.
Yeah, that's what Jesus Camp really...
It doesn't do that.
They give you their... They want you to think how they think. They don't leave it up to you to try to...
They don't think you're
smart enough to figure out, oh, what do you think about this? They're telling you what you think about it
by how they shoot it. Yeah, when you leave Jesus Camp, you feel like, if I don't do something about it, these people are going to take over.
Right.
But when you leave Hell House, you feel like these people are doing something that maybe needs to be done, or... You're like, I don't know if I really understand what they're doing, but it seems to be something there that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. So what is Hell House? We haven't really discussed it.
Well, I just talked a lot. Why don't you talk about
it? Okay, I'll say. Hell House is a documentary of a church in Texas, I believe Assemblies of God Church, which could also fall under Pentecostalism, right?
Well, you know, we didn't talk about Ted Haggard, but we can talk about him afterwards if you want.
Go ahead, I'll... Go segue here in a second.
Yeah, well, the one thing that was really poor about Jesus Camp is the way that they filmed Ted Haggard, which was this evangelical pastor.
Very political.
I think his church is non-denominational. Is that true? It's Colorado Springs Church.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But I think it is evangelical, kind of Pentecostal-esque church.
Sure.
Because... Like, it has a pulpit in the middle, and everyone's around it, and they have, like, an altar in the front.
10,000 people.
Yeah, it's a mega church in Colorado Springs. And he's been in the news lately because he was the head of this very political Christian organization that was against gays.
Gays and gay marriage.
And, you know, all of the gay pride agenda. And he was, you know, one of the provosts against it. And it turns out that he had some problems with homosexuality himself, and he came off as a really big hypocrite,
mm-hmm.
and he, this really poor light, he ended up losing his church when, the service came out. I don't know if he actually, had gay sex with anybody. I think he was getting massages, and he was doing things that were inappropriate,
right.
that he was preaching against, and it really came off as hypocritical, and people just kind of judged evangelicals, so he really had a,
negative
view of him, and then you come up with the video, and they go up and they film him right before he's going to do a sermon at his church. And because I think it's women filmmakers, that he let his guard down a little bit and he's joking with them and making some jokes. Mm-hmm. And he just looks like an idiot.
Yeah, like, that made him look really bad.
They look like, you don't know anything. This is our leader of today.
Yeah, they were trying to say, here's this prominent leader, 10,000 people, and look how ridiculous
and
he is.
And he does really stupid jokes. It looks like, like asinine, fumbling buffoon, It's like, how would anybody listen to him? Just the way they cut it. I mean, people probably make those kind of jokes all the time.
Yeah, they did cut it really badly.
Especially he's excited because he's about ready to get in front of a bunch of people. And it just, he said that you can learn as much about the Pentecostal movement is you can learn about Catholicism from Nacho Libre, which is Jack Black film where the monk becomes
true,
a wrestler.
That's true, actually. I've seen that. I saw it on the plane.
So, I mean, he really got a bad rap out of that, and he was really negative about the film. So
it made him look bad, so I'm sure he thought it was just from that perspective.
So I have a lot of compassion for Ted Haggard. I really don't know anything about his ministry and what he said and what's going on. But I just know that any time a man is up in front of that many people and in charge of that many people, it's just too much temptation for any person.
Right.
That, if he has struggles with that, maybe those struggles were the things that really motivated him to get into those political things. And he was probably arrogant and it got the best of him. But I don't blame the church for taking him down afterwards.
Right.
Which is a different issue.
It's a different issue.
I only say that because we were reading some articles about his church this week.
Yeah.
Do you remember where those were from?
Oh, I was just talking about who was the guy that was taking over the church now from Texas.
All right. Where was that Christianity Today?
Oh, yeah. It's from Crosswalk.
Yeah.
Okay. Religion Today.
All right.
But anyway.
Anyways, back to Hell House.
Hell House. I think it was a documentary from 2001, which I heard about from my friend Jen, who was actually screening it at her church. For whoever wanted to come see it. So I had heard about it back then. And then I read about it in a review when I was reading a review about Jesus Camp. And they said, the Hell House is a much better, fair-handed view of evangelical Christianity today.
Yes.
So I was like, I think I'll check it out. And anyway, so we found out Hell House. And basically it's about a church in Texas.
Yeah.
Assemblies of God Church. Probably a fairly large church. They didn't really ever get into that. But who puts on a show every Halloween, a haunted house, but much different than what you would normally see in a haunted house. And they would portray different sins that are commonly committed on earth, and then depending on whether the person was repentant or unrepentant of the sin or what they were going through, they would either go to hell, heaven or hell.
Because in every scene, someone would die.
Every scene, someone would die, that's
and
right.
And then they'd have angels.
Either the demon or the angel would come and take them off to heaven or hell. And then at the end of the Hell House, you would see what happens in heaven and hell, and they go through the whole explanation of, the afterlife. And then they also give you a chance, if you felt convicted by that, to confess your own personal sin.
They had like
at that time, and I think they had, how many people went through the whole house
this year? 21,000.
21,000. This is Dallas, Texas. Went through the Hell House, which was quite a production. Which you'll see if you watch the movie. It's not something a simple haunted house you normally see. It was a lot of work.
Yeah, they build like a whole structure. They use real guns.
Blanks.
And blanks.
Yeah. I was impressed. I haven't been to too many haunted houses, but the ones I've been to have been subpar.
It's very controversial,
but this one was quite... Yeah, obviously, it's very controversial.
Like, the one that's seen the girls...
They portray abortion.
Abortion.
Bleeding.
RU486, the woman's, like, bleeding to death. And then the other one, the guy has... It's a teenager, has AIDS. He's dying in the hospital of AIDS.
Right.
Another woman...
So they address things like homosexuality, date rape. Drug dealing, adultery,
all the common, like,
abortion,
sins, suicide, all the things that probably relevant to the people who are going through it.
Yeah, and relevant to teenagers. I think a lot of the scenes are relevant to maybe what teenagers might be facing.
Yeah.
So overall, I thought it was very interesting to see how they put that kind of production on.
It's something that's been going on for years.
Yeah, it's been going on since.
And they have this whole audition process that they go through, and they start off.
I think they said what's that? Jerry Falwell started the first one.
Oh, really?
I read some article.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He started the first one, and then after that, they spread. And obviously, this church was one of the founders of it too. So.
As much as people hate Jerry Falwell, I want to learn a little bit more about him.
It's very interesting. I mean, I think he got really too political, too, in terms of what he was agenda, but, I mean, stuff that I've read about him, I think he definitely had
Well, I think he openly spoke against sin, especially, like, homosexuality and things where people are afraid to talk about now.
He might have read too far into some things, but overall, I think he was genuine in his message.
Which counteracts, like, you know, us being too liberal now. But anyways, so they start with this whole audition process, like 2 months before the Hell House opens. And it starts filming there, and it goes through the auditions. Everyone goes through the auditions, I'm sorry. And, you know, you have to interview for the person who was raped, and you have to interview for the
These are all high school youth group.
No, yeah, they're all high school people, and then get about five people to play each part. And I think one of the criticisms that the director made that everyone wants to interview for the sinner because they feel like they're fixated on the sin and nobody wants to be the angel.
Everyone always wants to be the main part, though. Yeah. The sinner of that's just human nature.
Yeah, I didn't think there's
no
anything wrong with that.
No one wants to interview to be the side part. They want to be the front of the spotlight.
He did pretty good, but, you know, that was one of the things that he did criticize.
It's a comment, yeah.
Because he felt like it made me feel like his opinion was that the kids didn't really care about the movement, but they just were more interested in the, it's like fixation.
I don't think
living vicariously.
I felt that was not a good,
and, you know,
a
some
solid
of those
comment.
Kids, like, they may have walked in there wanting to be an actor or whatever,
I mean,
but they walked
high
out of
very
there.
Very awkward stage, so I don't, anyone that would do anything is just, I mean.
And obviously they get a lot of attention
awkward.
For it.
Right.
Because every part had like five people that played it. So, I mean, it was a big deal in the town. Like, people come from a long ways for it. And it's interesting. So, it shows the scene of, like, everyone's, like, you know, waiting in line. You know, they go in the Hell House. And the Hell House has, like, multiple rooms. So, you go from one room where one scene happens to the next room. And they build the whole site.
From scratch every year.
And then, as soon as you walk out, then
another group of,
six
like, 40
minutes,
people.
And you walk in, then the groups of 40 people go through. So, it's, like, pipelined. So there's a lot of people in there. And then it eventually gets to what Tracy was just talking about at the end, where they have a black man who feels kind of like he's like a sergeant in the military.
Yeah, he had a lot of authority, that's
and
for sure.
He really spoke with authority, and like he's like, you have like 2 minutes to decide, or 6 seconds to decide, actually, if you want to, you know, repent, and there's people who want to pray for you in this room, and you go through the door. He's in like 5 seconds. He's like, you just have now, because some people are coming through, and he's like, two, and then he's like, now get out.
Yeah.
And the people walk through, and I guess they actually have to walk through the same room where the people have repented, and the director didn't like that as much.
Oh. Well,
but I thought it was fine.
Yeah, you know? Whatever.
I mean, there's no point to be ridiculous.
Yeah, I know. It's not like you're going to go out into hell right then and there, but
I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it challenged me. It made me think, you know.
I thought for a high school, to get a high school youth group motivated to do something that's worthwhile, and I thought it was a good project, just because it's so hard to get high schoolers united to do something, and I don't know, I thought it was a good idea.
For something that's been going on for like 10 years.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And they go a little bit into the church. There
they were saying that like they thought like 1 in 5 people would join the church. They said that, you know, people converted 1 in 5 people, which I think they're just saying about people who actually came into the church after.
Yeah, and they could have already been Christians or the like. So that we just felt convicted by the whole scene, because they could have been in sin or whatnot, and that we got convicted by. So it's hard to say if how many people actually were.
Yeah. So I liked the movie because I felt like it actually, like, he was doing objective job filming. You can tell he didn't really approve
of it. I mean, I had no
it.
Idea about this And it's been going on for years within the
Christian
community. I
guess there's lots of hell houses across the country.
And we're not in rural Christian community, but not Dallas is not really rural either, but it's
compared to Chicago, which is very urban.
Yeah. The South is always
there's
probably
no
a little bit
and things
different.
Like that around here. You have to go quite a ways. So that was interesting.
Yeah, I would recommend it.
So I would recommend Hell House.
Recommend Hell House. Probably lukewarm on Jesus Camp.
I would skip Jesus Camp unless you're evangelical and you really want to see it. And I wouldn't show it to your unsaved friends. Hell House I'd show to anyone.
Yeah.
Because it leaves you asking questions.
Yeah, I feel that it's more...
It's fair.
Fair and balanced.
So, that was good. Okay, moving on. Shark Attack.
Shark Attack. It is Shark Week.
Tracy is a shark. She wants to be a shark.
I do want to be a shark.
Tracy loves sharks.
I'm just fascinated by them.
Yeah. She's been watching Shark Attacks.
I have been watching Shark Week
on
Discovery Channel.
With sharks get eaten. Part 54.
Yeah, they started recycling footage for different shows, though, which kind of annoyed me. Anyway, I mean, there's only been so many people that are lived to tell the tale of the shark attack that's worth filming. So then those people get recycled through. But anyway.
Is this Discovery or PBS?
This is Discovery Channel.
Every year
they have Shark Week every year. And, of course, every year they have to up the ante. You know, this year they're out in the water with great whites. There's one guy. They're all crazy. I have to say that up front. Those people on there are absolutely 100% crazy.
Crazy as in stupid.
Because they think... Oh, and I'll
like the guy
validate my point in a second. Yeah, that guy's crazy too. But that was on Planet Earth, which I also like. But so the guy goes swimming with the great white in open water, which, you know, not very few people have done.
Yeah.
And he holds the fin of the great white and swims along.
What?
Not very long. Maybe. They spent this whole show on this. It was all leading up to him finally getting a hold of the fin. And then this woman wants to go out and do it. And he's like, any amateur, he's so good with sharks, any amateur can go out there. So then, of course, this stupid woman who's like kind of ditzy gets out in the water. And she's like throwing a fit because she can't get a hold of the shark's fin and all this stuff. Anyway, it was kind of ridiculous.
She got eaten.
No, but everyone wanted her to get eaten because she wouldn't. They kept telling her to get back in the cage, and she wouldn't get back in it. Because obviously, if you're in the boat, you can see where the shark is at, and like if it's becoming more aggressive. And the woman's like, "I'm gonna stay out here." But anyway, the reason why these Discovery people are crazy is that one show demonstrated that one of the world-renowned shark experts, who thought he knew all about shark behavior, was filming a Discovery Channel show. With, like, I don't know how many, probably 100 bull sharks in the water, out in the shallow water, where he's standing with this other guy, Nigel. Which, if you've watched the Animal Planets and stuff, you know Nigel. And what happens to him? He thinks he knows what's going on. His leg gets ripped to shreds by a bull shark. And, I mean, they showed... he was on several different programs, but one program where they were analyzing it, they showed the whole scene, because they were shooting Discovery Channel... show, so they had it well filmed, and his leg calf was just strings of strings of guts and skin just hanging off of a little bone. He lost 50% of his blood of his body or something.
Whoa,
something crazy like that. And he had like 2 hours to live, and he lived to tell the tale. And of course, he gets back in a month later in the same
spot
because he's so arrogant about, and he's like blames it on his spotter and blames it on. This and that.
They're sharks.
He should have never let the shark get that close to him. I'm like, you're out in the water with them. How would they can decide what they're going to do? You don't know what they're going to do. Anyway.
You're not on the food chain anymore.
Yeah. So, I do believe they know more about sharks, so they can probably have a 50% better chance of being surviving in the water with them. But they still are risking their lives.
Well, you were like the grizzly man. You know, you can survive the grizzly man. Until they're hungry.
You don't know you can predict the condition of that shark that when you get in the water, but you don't know if it hasn't had a meal for 20 days unless you've been watching it for 20 days. And if it's hungry, it's going to try to eat you. Because even though they say they don't, and obviously they don't prefer human taste to, like, seals or whatever, but if it hasn't eaten anything, you'll eat garbage. You'll eat humans. I mean, it's just craziness. And there's been attacks where they've eaten the whole human, just, like, chewed them to bits. And there's been attacks where they just bite them and they think it's another predator in the water.
And then they're just like sizing them up on the nose, and then they'll go away.
It does happen. You poke them in the eye, but I'm sure if you poke some sharks in the eye, they'll come back after you again. They'll bite you. So, I've concluded they still don't know that much, and it's stupid. It's like tigers. I mean, tigers are going to attack you. You can't get out there in the tiger when it's hungry. Yeah, and it's like tigers don't eat normally eat humans either.
They're all talking about how they know all this crap, and then the next second they're like filming some fish in the Amazon. They're like, they're exhibiting this splashing behavior because of their mating survival utilities.
I do agree, though, that humans
just flapping around the water.
When humans even step into a beach, which you're only wading a few, you're risking your life in some because you're going into a wilderness. And I think that's fair. I don't think humans should have any right to think they can go into the water safely. If you go snorkeling or something, you go into shark water, you have a chance of getting eaten, and that's your chance.
It's like if I climb down a steep cliff, should I really not be afraid of falling? You know, there's a point where it's just, like, obvious, you know?
You can't create these safe environments.
You don't run with scissors.
Yeah, exactly. So, but we did go to the Shedd Aquarium this week to see sharks.
Yeah, we're inspired to go see some sharks.
Close and personal. I really wanted to see the Komodo dragon, which was laying on its behind the whole time.
Well, the poor thing's stuck in this glass
box.
It
is. It doesn't have any room. It's like a 6-foot-long lizard.
They're talking about how fast it can run and all these things, and the thing is just depressed and lonely. It's depressed.
Faust was his name. Depressed Faust.
Like the opera. Faust was this guy who was really after himself, and he spends all his life pursuing knowledge and trying to learn scholarly stuff, and then when he gets old, he realized he wasted all his life, and he really just wanted the hot chick. So he makes this deal with the
like
devil.
Like all operas.
So he makes this deal with the devil, and the devil makes him young again. So he goes and he pursues this woman, and he eventually seduces the woman, but the woman, you know, repents, and then she finds Christ in the end, and the guy never overcomes his sinful fleshly desire, and he's condemned in himself. So it was interesting. It's kind of... A lot of operas have Christian elements because that's when they're developed. But
what does that have to do with the Komodo dragon?
Because his name is Faust and so was that
I know.
Opera. So that was just a little background, though, you know.
I did like that at least the darn thing opened its eye. It was sleeping for a little bit. Like it could sense that there was some movement out there.
It had
but
a
all
glass
it did
box,
was open its eye.
It had its nose in the very corner of the glass box. Which is interesting because Tracy got to be a half an inch away from the Komodo dragon.
That's true. I was a half inch away from that thing's mouth. Hopefully the disease didn't come through the glass. Those things are got
unclean.
All kinds of uncleanness to them.
Are they the largest lizard?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're dragons.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize how big crocodiles and
lizards,
and
they have a whole
are.
Lizard exhibit there, and they all are just sitting. They're just so, they just like to sit and soak in the sun. They have those artificial sun lamps in there so they can just sit.
Yeah.
Which I would do too if that's all I could do. But
I like the Shedd Aquarium.
I like it too. It's a good museum.
It was fun. Like, I didn't went out to the one branch where they had the dolphins.
I like the Pacific Northwest region.
Yeah.
Very,
the trees are beautiful.
It was
with
like,
the,
oh, we're going to be there in a month.
Yeah. We're going to Seattle.
Yay.
I'm really excited.
You've
though.
Never been there.
No.
Craziness.
You know, I've heard people say really bad things about it, but those are the people that were like
have
on the sun, the beach, and
it's
they like the
California.
Surf.
This
it's
is
not
a
LA.
Whole new region of the
it's
country.
Totally different. If you like LA, you won't like this. And I'm like, I don't really like LA that much.
I don't like LA.
It sounds pretty darn good
exactly.
to me. You know, they got rainforest near there in Calgary, Canada.
Calgary.
How far is Calgary from Seattle?
Well, it's quite
Vancouver,
a ways. It was 10 hours from Vancouver to Calgary, so it's probably 12 hours.
North? Yeah.
Remember, we were looking at that map the other day to see how we could drive there.
Well, I'm confused.
And it was 10 hours from Vancouver to Calgary.
Calgary?
What, you think it's closer?
Oh, I must be confused.
The rainforest that I was talking
Calgary
about.
Because Calgary is where you were working.
The cold. Yeah, I've worked in Calgary, too.
Oh, for some reason I was thinking of rainforest in Calgary. It must be in Vancouver.
There might be
it doesn't
one
make
there.
Sense to be in Calgary, is
no,
it?
No, the rainforest is in Olympic National Park.
Which is near
the
Seattle.
It's called the Coe Rainforest, which is basically
in Alberta.
Five hours from Seattle because it takes a long time to drive there through the national park.
Right.
It's closer to the
it's
coast.
Not that far, but it's, you know, it takes
it's over
time.
The other side of the Cascade Mountains, which I haven't been because
You got, like, volcanoes, you got national parks, you got glaciers not too far away, you got all these things. You got Canada with all the coastal islands in Vancouver. We're just excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're going there. We were inspired when we were at the Shedd Aquarium because they had all the pine trees and the regional things of, like, the coast.
Yeah, it was so cool. The nice fake mist they had going in there.
Yeah. The dolphins.
And I love dolphins, and I love orcas. Yeah. And I love the belugas, are my favorite.
You like the shark whale?
I really want to swim with the beluga whale. They're so cute.
They're the white,
the big fat
whales.
White
look like
Stay Puft Marshmallow
Man.
They
look like a whale and a dolphin, but they have like the head of a dolphin.
So much blubber.
And like the body of like a seal.
They just look so happy and
like,
friendly.
They look like a sea cow, but they're all
they
white.
Had little rubber, they just had a baby there, and they had little rubber duckies, and the little baby was playing with the little rubber duckies. They're just
they were
so
little.
Happy.
They were like larger than a
gallon
of milk.
Well, it was born heavier than I was,
no,
than I weigh.
Ducky. The rubber ducky was bigger than a gallon of milk. It was huge rubber
it
duckies.
It was a huge rubber ducky.
But so they were playing cute. With them.
So they just seemed friendly. I would get in the water
with
it. Although I'm not sure about that until they tell me if they'll kill me, but I'm pretty sure they won't.
Yeah. So, let's move on to our next segment. Let's talk about books.
Books.
We're nerds, and we like to read. So, let's talk about some books that you're interested in, that you have read, that you are reading, and you want to read.
Okay.
You go first.
I have read. I just finished Knowledge of the Holy, which I think we've talked about in podcasts.
Woohoo!
Which is about the attributes of God. A.W. Tozer. Excellent. Recommend it. Short book. Good book.
Highly recommended.
And I'm now reading, actually I'm almost finished with The Hidden Art of Homemaking by Edith Schaefer, Francis Schaefer's wife.
Yeah.
Which I've really been inspired by.
Yeah.
We did soap carving and some interesting cooking out of there.
We carved some sharks out of bars of soap.
Basically, the premise of the book is that we as creatures need to be creative because we are made in the image of God, who is the ultimate creator, so we should be creative. And if you aren't creative, it goes away, it fades away, too. So it's good to keep it up, even when you're simple things like cooking and decorating, artistic stuff.
Yeah.
So we're going to start our own band, me and Wyatt. He's going to play the banjo, and I'm going to play the fiddle. Probably. That's what
we're
talking
about. That's grass.
What we're talking about.
Old Joe Clark! Old Joe Clark!
We'll see if that develops.
I've got shoes, you got shoes, all got you got shoes.
That's our first song.
When I get to heaven, I'm going to put on my shoes and I'm going to walk all over God's heaven. Heaven.
So mainly I'm reading this to get some inspiration. Oh, I also was... She in the book talked about how you would illustrate the sermon for children. So I did that during one Sunday for Wyatt. And I illustrated the sermon for him. He got much more out of it than you.
I finally learned. I learned it.
But I like drawing, so I like to draw during sermons. To illustrate the point to someone who's younger.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started reading Charles Spurgeon's Hall of Grace.
How far are you
and I well, I've got the Golden Classic edition, so I'm reading his biography first.
I saw it laying around.
Yeah. So it's a short book, but it does have his whole biography, so I'm reading about him. He was from England in the 1800s, I believe.
Very famous.
Same time as Moody. D.L. Moody, or alma mater men, but in England. Anyway, so I'll have more to say once I read more. I haven't read a lot, although I started preaching at 16 and had a big church by 19, but that's all I know so far.
Hmm.
It seems pretty interesting, and I want to read the book called Act of Marriage.
Oh, really?
Which gives you the down and dirtiness of marriage.
Tracy loves reading
written
about
by
marriages.
Tim LaHaye. Uh-oh. Also author of Left Behind and the Prophecy Bible.
Oh, no. That's who wrote that book. I saw that book.
Act of Marriage. Check it out. If you're getting married, don't check it out before then.
What about that Nancy Neal Moss book?
Oh, Lies Women Believe. Actually, I submitted that for our next Bible study, and it's the lead runner now, so I think
awesome.
It's going to be our book.
Tracy,
which I'm happy because I wanted to read it, because it's about women controlling their emotions. Which we know
impossible. Lies.
So that was recommended by someone, a very wise woman at our church, highly recommended that in our marriage class. So I thought I should read it. And there's a Bible study, 12-week Bible study or 10-week Bible study that our small group will likely be starting. So then I'll be into that book too. And I'll get, since I'm leading it, I'll get to study it more in depth.
I think it's good when you lead. I like it when you lead.
Oh, yeah.
That's cool.
That's a wrap up. I mean, I want to read.
Is there any books that you want to read?
I want to read Lad's The Kingdom.
Yeah. I'll talk about Lad in a minute.
And, what else did I buy? Oh, I got Let the Nations Be Glad by Piper. I want to read. I got a whole little list of stuff I want to read.
Right.
But that's it for now.
My friend James recommended this list on Christianity Today, the top 50 books that influenced the evangelicals in the last 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And this is kind of what inspired some of these up-and-coming books that we may want to read.
Yeah, that's true. That's where I got the one marriage book from.
All right. A few people have recommended that I read some of Bonhoeffer's work.
Oh, yeah. There was a Bonhoeffer book I wanted to read.
Yeah, The Cost of Discipleship, I guess. I don't really have a lot of interest, you know, in what he says and things he has done, but because people have recommended it, that I feel like that's going to be on my list just because people I respect have recommended it.
Yeah, there's some biography.
And it's on that list. So there must be something good in there to be aware of. Because I really have changed my attitude of, like, reading. I was spending a lot of time learning classic lit.
Mm-hmm.
And now I feel like I'm only going to read so many books, so that now I have to read the Bible and books about the Bible and things that are going to help my faith. Because I realize I can only read X books, and if I were to choose which books those were, I want ones to be actually valuable to me. Not that those books are bad, because I just read Don Quixote.
Mm-hmm.
It took me almost a year, but I loved it. Mm-hmm. It was fun. But I'm like, how did this really help me grow spiritually? So it's not that those books are bad. I just know that I can only read so much.
Exactly.
So I've been reading lately. I don't think I've completed any books lately because I've been reading several really large books.
Yeah.
And the most influential right now is this George Ladd's. It's George Elton Ladd. Wrote this book called The Theology of the New Testament, and I think most everyone who goes to seminary reads it, and it really just explains the gospel of the kingdom of already not yet, how when Jesus died the Spirit of God came upon the world and the kingdom of God had come
forget you had a mic
spiritually gun. But like it has not come physically, and we're waiting for Christ to come again. And really, like, each page, it goes through the Gospels, and it goes through Paul's writing, then the Epistles and Revelation, and mm-hmm. explains them. And I just feel like every page, I learn something new about the Word that get before. It's not that he's, like, the ultimate man, but I just feel like he's a lot. He
explains it very clearly.
He's far ahead of me, and the book is very, like, you know, academic, but you can read it. Like, you're able to read it page after page, like, if you were to pick up Wayne Grudem's Systematic Theology,
yeah.
You can't read that because it's like an encyclopedia.
It's pretty easy reading, but...
But it doesn't have a lot of motivation in just the page-turning. Where this has, like, it has a page-turning ability.
That's good.
So it's like 800 pages. I love it.
800 pages.
But on the top 50 list, there's The Gospel of the Kingdom, which I think...
That's what I'm going
to
read.
It just narrows it down to the things that Ladd figured out about the kingdom, already not yet. That is really immensely valuable, and I almost would like to read that, too.
Well, we'll get it.
So if Tracy reads it, then I'll read it after I get through my other books.
Mm-hmm.
I love the ESV Bible. I really want to buy this new interlinear ESV Greek Bible.
Yes, I know you do.
Because it has a Greek right underneath the English, and I've just really been impressed by the Greek lately of, like, realizing, well, it says love 5 times in a verse, but you realize in the Greek, each of those loves have a different Greek word. They have a different meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested in that. I'm reading a book on intelligent design called The Edge of Evolution. Edge of Evolution
Edge
by
of
Michael.
Edge of Evolution by Michael Behe.
Yep. Yeah. And it's really interesting. And it's all about intelligent design and irreducible complexity. It basically says that, okay, there is some sort of evolutionary like mechanism going on, but it actually studies how slow it goes, that it would take like a trillion times longer than time actually has existed to do what they say it does. So it basically says the data doesn't map up
to
what's going on.
This is just from the thought.
Okay.
These people who are into global warming are also usually evolutionary people too. I'm like, why are you worried about global warming? Aren't we just going to evolve with what conditions are? Why are you worried about global warming? We're going to evolve. It's evolution. Chill. That's what I want to say. I got my Goro 8 bumper sticker up in my refrigerator right now. Our people, our world, our planet. Go Gore.
I guess, like, it seems like today that people think that global warming is the only cause that's really worth going after. Because evangelical Christians really don't care about global warming because they realize this world's passing away anyway.
Yeah, it's decrepit.
It's going to destroy it, you know. Despite global warming, the sun's going to explode one day anyway. So we really don't care about those things. We do care about, you know, that no one's pooping in our drinking water, and that, you know, that we don't have Ebola and E. coli and all other kinds of diseases in our swimming pools. You know, things that are, like, practical and valuable, that were healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you know, guessing about the temperature of the Earth is just kind of like, you know, come on, how do you know that this is good or bad? You don't even know. Maybe the world would be better off if it was a little bit warmer.
Exactly.
We have no idea.
What do we need ice caps for? We get more drinking water.
Maybe it'll help, you know. Maybe there'll be less salinity in the oceans and things will improve. You know. This is ridiculous.
We're not global warming enthusiasts, as you can tell.
It's a waste of time. It's sad. They need to learn about Christ and focus on something
more. I also have a bone to pick with all these celebrities who waste a lot more energy just because they drive a hybrid car. They think they're environmentalists. Excuse me, I live in not even a one-bedroom apartment. And how many bedrooms do you have? 1,500? Okay. You know how much energy you're spending to light those 1,500 bedrooms? Yeah. I don't fly a Learjet plane. I fly economy. Anyway, this is my bone to pick with celebrities.
So another book I'm reading is called The Genesis Flood, which was also on the list. I was surprised.
It was on the list. I noticed that.
And it talks about creation science, which is different than intelligent design. And they believe the world was created in 6 days. And there's evidence, scientific evidence, that that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Such that you can be an intellectual and believe in young Earth. It's not just something that's pseudoscience. It's ridiculous. There's evidential, you know, beliefs that support it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm about, I say, 80% the way through that. And, like, I kind of stalled on that one just because it's getting into some details that really is, you know, I'm not going to really understand. And they're more academic than what I'm going to understand. It's written by a geologist, so it has some credibility. It was very influential when it came out.
Spelunking.
The spelunking with sharks.
That would be sweet.
Underwater spelunking.
Everywhere I go now, I'm just like, whenever I see a body of water, I'm like, I just wish there were a bunch of sharks in there. When we were at Lincoln Park Zoo today, I was like, wouldn't it be sweet if there were sharks in that water with all those people riding around in paddle boats? That would be sweet.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's my fascination for the week. Oh, I have some new recipe tips.
Oh, really? It's here.
Well, I am planning a bridal shower this weekend, so I was coming up with some new party creations.
Oh, yeah? Is that what I had today?
You had a mini quiche.
Oh, hallelujah, praise Jesus.
It was good, wasn't it?
It was ambrosia.
Ambrosia.
You know what that is?
It's a
food of the gods. Oh,
okay. It's some other kind of food, too, but that's okay.
You're Greek. Come on.
I know, but there's also another food called ambrosia. Anyway. Easiest recipes ever, and they taste so good, and they make this is my party tip. Get those mini phyllo cups from your freezer section. You can make sweet and savory tarts, you can make mini quiches. And all I did for the quiche, I mixed the eggs, cream, and some garlic and herb cheese to make a little light herb garlic cheese quiche, and mix it up. It took me 5 minutes with my immersion blender. Actually, it took me 1 minute with my immersion blender. Poured it into little cups, baked it off 8 minutes, and Wyatt was eating one 2 seconds later, and it was delicious.
It was scrumptious.
It was delicious for the time it took.
Tracy's
unbelievable.
Cooking was like heaven.
And also, I'm learning about canapes, which I can't explain to you right now, but one of my canapes that I'm making is this. You get one of those seedless English cucumbers that comes in plastic. Canape.
Oh.
Señor. And you slice it into like maybe half inch thick little slices. You take a melon baller, which is the greatest invention ever. You ball out some of the seeds in there, which is seedless, but they're still seeds. Figure, go figure. Yes. and then you get a little hole in it, so it's got this pretty, and then you fill that with some mixture of this garlic herb cheese, which I also use for the quiche, but I chopped up some onion, red pepper, scallions, I made like this, and dill, fresh dill, I made like this fresh garden herb cheese, and put it inside the cucumber as a little like crisp there, and it's a little finger bite you can have. It's delicious. Mm. It's so good too.
It is delicious. I had one.
That is a party planning tip.
If she's not looking, I'm going to eat some.
I know, I gotta hide them for tomorrow.
I like to eat in the middle of the night.
You can prep it. I prepped it all today, so tomorrow when I go to the party, all I need is maybe 30 minutes to get it all plated and good to go. I also balled up some watermelon, which my melon baller, which is a wonderful tool.
It was good. I liked it.
Did you like the balls?
Yeah. The balls of watermelon.
That's right. Don't worry, we're not getting that.
To the balls of watermelon.
That was a good watermelon. Watermelon for $3 in the summer. That's all I can say. I got killed
myself. I don't trust you able to walk home with that.
I carried two wedding gifts from Bed Bath & Beyond, which I carried like Santa Claus over my back, and my new laptop computer, which I just got.
Yeah.
And I stopped off at Jewel, picked up like it was 10 to 15 pound watermelon, a 3 pound bag of potatoes, and I don't know what else, but I carried that all home. And some guy on a bike stopped and was like, "That girl is strong." That's what he said.
He was crazy.
He's one of those crazy division people, but God love them.
Oh, well.
We're going long, aren't we?
Yeah, that's okay. Let's just say something about Chicago. Is there anything about Chicago that, you know, is relevant to where we live?
Walked the streets of Chicago for three times yesterday, up and down as I went to go.
In the loop to Gold Coast and back.
And all I know is there's way too many tourists here in the summertime. And too much construction. But it was pretty. I like the buildings.
I had an opportunity to serve at the shelter with my friend James in Andersonville. There's this ministry called Breakthrough Ministry that helps people on the street get jobs and reacclimated into society.
Now, James still does that since he's at Willow Creek.
Oh, he's awesome. He actually went and he took one of the guys that were in the shelter out and gave him driving lessons and helped him get his driver's license.
I know, that's pretty cool.
Which was a huge risk because a lot of these guys are like in the drugs. And, I mean, these are hardcore. They have some serious problems going on. And he really sacrificed and took a risk and helped the guy. Like, I remember when I saw the guy, his name is Mitch, and, you know, at the beginning, he was just really, dirty, dark, mm-hmm. and you look in his eyes, you're like, you're not really listening. Mm-hmm. But when I saw him last time, it's like, he felt like he had life in him again. Mm-hmm. He was going to Willow Church Chicago.
Oh, good.
Downtown, and, you know, James was helping him, and I just felt like some people had invested a little bit into him, and, you know, maybe he was just, you know, had been off of drugs for a little bit. I don't know if he was on them or not, but mm-hmm. you never know with a lot of those guys because they have a hard life. I was just encouraged by that. So, you know, I helped, you know, cook dinner there. And I just encourage you, if you listen to this, to, you know, if you have any chance to go to a shelter, to go participate and, you know, go make dinner one day or just see what you could do. Just to invest a little bit in some people that are hurting. My mom was encouraging me today. I talked to her on the phone. She was saying, "You have no idea how many people around you are in hospice and are in suffering."
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, a lot of them are shut-ins. And so you just have no idea. Because, like, you and me, I notice when I go to work, everyone's young and healthy.
That's
and,
true.
You know, sexy.
Well, when I work at home, all the old people around the building.
Yeah.
And then I know.
You know, I'm a little bit reluctant to tell you about this because I don't want you to think I'm boasting or anything about it. I just want to encourage you to think about that for yourself and see if there's somehow that maybe you can look into it. Because I'm sure every town has people that are hurting.
Mm-hmm.
No matter where you are.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, I think we've been talking a long time.
We have been.
So, pronounce the ending.
Domo.
Ero.
Goto.
Itishimatsi.
Sisi.
Sayonara.
Sayonara.
Why Team Red Bliss Podcast?
Is that off? Because I was going to say something.
You can say something. Go ahead. So go on.
No, I'm going to say something I want to say off air. That's what I wanted to say.
Oh, I see what I mean. Well, we'll see you next time. This has been Wyatt and Tracy's Haven of Bliss. Soon to be Peas in a Podcast.
Peas in a Podcast.
It's the new title.
Two peas pictures with our little faces on them.
Inspired by my mom and Jonathan Schwartz. And we'll see you next time.